little veggie mice as bright as bright can be.
We all enjoy our veggie mice for breakfast, lunch, and tea. Our mummy says we're growing stronger every single week because we love our veggie mice. We all adore our veggie mice. It puts a rose in every cheek.
We're growing stronger every week.
G'day and welcome to the Drunken Bizman Podcast. I'm your host, Drunkle Dan, and yes, that was indeed the little Vegemite song. Now, for those of you who aren't from Australia, you'd have no idea what the fuck that was or why the fuck I just played it. So, to give you a bit of a backfill, a couple of weeks ago, I stumbled across the story of this person over in the States by the name of Cassidy Boone, who turned around and called Vegemite racist. Look, you know what? To save her getting some fucking views and so you know exactly what I'm on about, I'm going to play the clip for you right now. Here it goes.
I got a message for all the Australians out there. You ready?
Vegemite is fucking racist!
Yeah, I said it. Your favorite fucking spread is racist as fuck. It's literally keeping Aboriginals down and making them feel like they're worthless. If you eat Vegemite, you're literally what's wrong with the world. You should really be ashamed of yourselves as Australians. Ever since the 1950s or whatever, Vegemite has been a way to symbolically make white Australians feel superior to Aboriginals by literally eating their skin in a fucking jar. Vegemite is black because Aboriginals are black. And it's a way for the racists that run your country and the people who make Vegemite to keep Aboriginals down as long as possible. From birth, white Australians are taught that it's okay to insult and disrespect Aboriginals by spreading this nasty shit all over your toast. It's gotta stop, guys. Seriously. And the thing is, I lived in Australia since the time I was 9 until I was 16. And even though I'm not Australian, I'm ashamed of all of you. Seriously. I lived there. I breathed the racist culture. I saw how y'all think Aboriginals are less than people, and how you eat Vegemite all day to feel superior to them. Look, all Australia is racist, beer, pingas, and Vegemite. And it all boils down to hating Aboriginals. You need to be ashamed, mates. I'm starting a campaign called #BanVegemite. That I'm hoping will reach your KKK Grand Wizard, Tony Abbott, and make him realize just how racist Vegemite really is. I know Australians are feeling really guilty about eating it. I want everybody, not only Australians, to tweet under the #BanVegemite.
Alright, and that's enough of that shit. So, this Cassidy Boone, I've done a bit of research on now. I'm not sure whether this is satire or whether this is a sincere fucking message, because she has written a couple articles for the Stately Herald, which is in of itself a satirical newspaper. Now, she proponed to be a hardcore feminist and all this sort of shit, which I think is where the satire would come from if it's going to come from. This is the lady, of course, behind, she supposedly got her father beat up as a Father's Day present, so he would understand what it's like being a woman, and was also the genius, use that term rather loosely, behind the #SaveRape campaign, where she allegedly was going to sue a man who saved her fucking unconscious ass from drowning, and because he felt he had the right to touch her and all this sort of shit. She was going to sue him. So, I'm not quite certain whether this is satirical or not, but I tell you what, man, did she fucking pick the wrong group of people to fucking to insult their national fucking food. To the point the hate has been that strong that just a couple of days ago, she released a follow-up video where she calls on all Australians to stop using the word cunt, because apparently she's been getting called cunt a lot. Cunt being a phrase used in Australia for everything from mate to bastard to your worst enemy and everything in between. Me personally, I love the word cunt. I know it's not the most acceptable word to use in certain cultures, but cunt is my favourite word. And let's face it, she's not a cunt. And I'll tell you why. Cunts are warm, they're nice and moist, they're a little bit furry. Everybody fucking loves a cunt. Nobody loves you, you thunder cunt, which is another fucking Australian term for, you know, a way to put the word cunt into the wrong type of word. Now that I've hit my quota of cunt for the episode, I think we'll move on. So I thought what I would do today is we'd have a bit of a look at the fucking history of Vegemite. Poor Vegemite, that's copped a bit of flack recently in the last few months, in particular what with the Grand Wizard Tony Abbott, who is thankfully finally out of power, calling for the potential Vegemite ban in dry communities in the Northern Territory. Which is a real funny fucking comment when you think about the fact that the only dry communities in Australia are Aboriginal communities, because they do have a bit of a problem with the alcohol. Now, Tony Abbott was talking about banning fucking Vegemite because he was under the misguided idea that because Vegemite's made out of yeast, people might be able to make alcohol from it, not fucking realizing that by the time you get the Vegemite out of the yeast, it's deactivated. They make Vegemite out of brewer's yeast after it's been used, so you can't actually brew alcohol. So it's got copped a bit of shit. So what I thought I'd do today, just to start the episode before we get into all the other fun stuff, is I thought we'd go into the history of Vegemite just a little bit. And by a little bit, I mean an awful fucking lot. So in 1919, following the disruption of British Marmite imports after World War I and prior to the introduction of Vegemite, a fella by the name of Cyril P. Callister and his employer, which was an Australian company at the time called Fred Walker & Co., gave him the task of developing a spread from the used yeast being dumped by breweries. Callister had been hired by the chairman, Fred Walker. Now, Vegemite was registered as a trademark in Australia in 1919. Now, Callister used a certain process to break down the yeast cells from waste obtained from a Carlton and United brewery. A brewery, incidentally, that is still in production today and makes a very nice fucking stout, I should say. So what he would do is he'd concentrate the clear liquid extract and blend it with salt, celery and onion, which formed a sticky black paste. Now, if you've never had Vegemite, she's a bit of a fucking wild bit of gear. It's not something you spread on thickly like a jam or a peanut butter or something like that. It's a nice light spread. And in Australia, it goes on or in just about fucking everything. Now, I draw the line at Vegemite on Weet-Bix, which is like a wheat biscuit cereal that we get, because that's fucking nasty. But goes in the fucking mashed potatoes. Makes a very nice mashed potato, actually. So, following a nationwide competition with a prize of £50, which in today's money is close to $4,000-$4,500, to find a name for the new spread, the name Vegemite was selected out of a hat by Fred Walker's daughter, funnily enough named Sheila. I mean, fucking how Australian can this story get? The sisters, Hilda and Laurel Armstrong, who were aged 18 and 20 at the time from somewhere down in Victoria, were known as the Vegemite Girls for the rest of their life. Now, Vegemite first appeared on the market in 1923, with advertising emphasizing the value of Vegemite to children's health, but it failed to sell very well. Faced with growing competition from Marmite, which is a very similar product from the UK, from 1928 to 1935, the product was renamed as Parwill to make use of the advertising slogan Marmite, but Parwill. Which was, you know, a really shitty pun on the new name and that of its competitor. You know, as in to say, you know, if mother might, then father will. The attempt to expand the market share was unsuccessful and the name was changed back to Vegemite. Now, in 1925, Walker had established the Kraft Walker Cheese Company as a joint venture company with J.L. Kraft and Brothers to market processed cheese, and following the failure of Parwill in 1935, he used the success of Walker Cheese to promote Vegemite. Now, you can still get Kraft Walker Cheese or Kraft Cheese today. You know, the sliced cheeses that you get that are a little bit like fucking plastic. So, in a two-year campaign to promote sales, Vegemite was given away free with Kraft cheese products with a coupon redemption. And this was followed by poetry competitions with imported American Pontiac cars being offered as prizes. Sales responded, and in 1939, Vegemite was officially endorsed by the British Medical Association as a rich source of B vitamins, one of the most important series of vitamins you can get. Now, it was rationed in Australia during WW2, Main reason being that Vegemite was actually included in Australian Army rations and by the late 1940s was used in 9 out of 10 Australian homes. Now, another fucking feather in Vegemite's cap was in April of 1984, the 115 gram jar of Vegemite became the very first product in Australia to be electronically scanned at a checkout. So, these days, Vegemite is produced in Australia at Port Melbourne, somewhere down there, and produces more than 22 million jars per year. Now, it's pretty much the same fucking Vegemite we were eating in 1919. It is by far the biggest selling product in Australia, and the billionth jar of Vegemite was actually produced in October of 2008. Yeah, it used to be made in New Zealand for a bit, or sold New Zealand for a bit, but by, I think it was 2006, 2007, production had ceased, because they're still very British country. Our Kiwis across the lake, and they prefer their Marmite, and I can tell that from personal experience, because I know quite a few Kiwis and Maoris, and they all prefer that Marmite over the Vegemite, which is not as harsh, I suppose you'd say, and just a little bit saltier. Now, like I said, it is one of the richest sources in B vitamins, specifically thiamine, riboflavin, niacin, and folic acid. But unlike Marmite and some other yeast extracts, it contains no vitamin B12. So, like I said, the main ingredient of Vegemite is yeast extract, which contains a high concentration of glutamic acid, which is the source of Vegemite's rich umami flavor, which means it goes over very well over in Asia. It doesn't contain any fat, sugar, or animal content. It does contain gluten, though. It also contains about 3.5% sodium, which equates to a salt worth approximately 8.6% of your daily intake. Yeah, look, man, this thing has been a staple ever since I can fucking remember. Since anybody can ever remember, to the point where... during the 90s, Kraft actually released a product in Australia known as Vegemite Singles. It combined Kraft Singles and Vegemite into one, thus creating Vegemite-flavored cheese. Now, this goes one step further because in 2009, Kraft released a new version of Vegemite, which is the Kraft Cream Cheese and the Vegemite named, imaginably enough, Cheesy Bite, which was once again chosen via competition. Ed said, so we've also had Vegemite chocolate and all sorts of shit. Now, Vegemite has been banned in the past in the United States for the main reason being that Vegemite refused to put imperial measurements on its nutritional diet and in its nutritional information, and also because it contains folate, which is a B vitamin approved as an additive in the United States for only a couple little different foods. Vegemite is also banned from Victorian prisons, with the bans becoming into effect in the 1990s for the same fucking reason that Tony Abbott tried to ban alcohol, ban it in dry fucking things. They were worried that, you know, prisoners were going to use it to make alcohol with it. So, Vegemite, this thing that is a fucking staple of the Australian fucking culture and every Aussie's fucking upbringing, and you will not walk into an Aussie house without finding a jar of Vegemite somewhere in the cupboard. So, to prove my point as to just how spectacular fucking Vegemite is and how deeply ingrained it is in the Australian consciousness, I'm going to now just play a little clip from a local show over here that's no longer running called Good News Week. So, here is the clip in question, and I'll see you in a minute.
Greetings. This is Strange But True. Claire, Mark, Fiona, you had the jar.
Yep.
The rosy cheeks.
Oh. Oh.
What an appropriate way for you first to taste Vegemite. Normally we smear it on toast, but, you know, whatever you'd like. And Fiona.
I'd think I'm turning Japanese. I think I'm turning Japanese. I really think so. I think I'm turning Japanese. I think I'm turning Japanese. I really think so. I think I'm turning Japanese. I think I'm turning Japanese. I really think so.
I think that's something to do with the Japanese fascination with salt and white ass.
And that's our answer.
No!
No! See, this is tricky because I know that the only Vegemite story I know about is that there's a shortage of Vegemite in Hong Kong. They're expat Australians living in Hong Kong who are complaining because they can't get their Vegemite on toast for breakfast. And
but that's a bit.
Yeah, but then that would be quite racist to sing Turning Japanese for Hong Kong. Exactly.
I believe that it's the Japanese have started to really get Vegemite, which you people still don't.
It's not. It tastes like spreadable beer.
It's delicious.
And your problem is?
I reckon it was.
Yeah. Rosy Cheeks are from the Vegemite song.
The Vegemite song. But I think
how does that go? I'd like to hear that.
Shut up.
Which is the Vegemite song?
I don't know.
Everyone.
Happy little Vegemites as bright as I can be. We all enjoy our Vegemite for breakfast, lunch, and tea. Because we love our Vegemite, we all enjoy our Vegemite. It puts a rose in every cheek.
And we got...
We are an army! We are an army forged by Vegemite!
We sang that at Gallipoli and it scared the shit out of the Turks.
We don't remember our own anthem. No.
Oh my God, man. What the fuck just happened here?
Greg, I really thought at the end of that it was going to be an end. Kill the Jews!
I feel like Sigourney Weaver in Aliens 2 realizing that she's in a room full of hatching eggs.
Sorry, any chance I get to put fucking bit of Good News Week into the show, I'm gonna fucking do it. So, you know, that just goes as a good damn example of just how much we Aussies love our Vegemite. So even if this is satire, getting back to the fucking point, you have quite possibly picked the dumbest fucking way of going about, you know, getting a name for yourself by taking the piss out of a beloved national treasure in a nation that can know the song from a fucking advert, but cannot remember its own national anthem half the time. I dare you to ask an Aussie to sing both verses of a national anthem. You will not fucking find many who can. So, Cassidy Boone, you are nothing but a fucking thunder cunt, and you need to fucking leave it alone. Well and truly the fuck alone. So, I just wanted to start with that because it's fucking... I could not believe it this week when that come upon me and my travels. I know I've been off for the last couple of weeks, but what can you fucking do? So, I think I'm going to take just a real quick little break before we get into the news for this week. So, I'll see you in just a second.
Shake brings all the boys to the yard and they laugh. It's better than yours, hey, damn right. Well, it's better than yours, I can teach you, but I'd have to charge. My milkshake brings all the boys to the yard and they laugh. It's better than yours, hey, damn right. Well, it's better than yours, I can teach you. Why, you know you want it. The thing that makes me what the boys go crazy for. They blow their minds and they wait a while. Well, I think it's time. Well, I want it all. The boys are waiting. Well, I want it all. could teach you, but I'd have to try. Dry milkshake when the bugs in the yard and their life is better than yours. Hey, damn right, it's better than yours. I could teach you, why you know you want it. The thing that makes me what the boys go crazy for. Will they care for that? Just please don't get caught. Watch it, just smile. Well, I want it all. The boys are waiting.
So that was Pictures covering Milkshake by, of course, Khalees on one of the Australian radio stations over here, Triple J, for their Like A Version. So I thought we'd keep going with the Aussie innovations in the news this week, with this month seeing the release of Vitamin Vodka. So you've got your hangover-free wine, but for those people who prefer a bit of a hard liquor from to get their buzz from, there's a Victorian mob who have brought Vitamin Vodka, a liquor that is infused with anti-hangover vitamins. The idea is this: the vodka contains vitamins K, B, and C to help supplement some of the nutrients lost when drinking alcohol and assist with hydration. As it's primarily dehydration responsible for the hangover, the company's business manager, Bradley Mitten, explains. Four shots is equivalent of one multivitamin, he says. Now, Mitten isn't the first to dive into the world of saving tomorrow without compromising tonight. Lotus Vodka, which was released in San Fran back in 2007, was loaded with vitamins, but the brand folded after only a year. With all those vitamins in it, will it actually save from a hangover? Maybe not. The belief that B vitamins will cure a hangover comes from the idea that alcoholics often have vitamin B deficiency, says Mike Russell, who's a PhD. Yet, assuming that restoring those nutrients will cure symptoms of a hangover is a rather large leap of faith, not science. Now, that is actually quite fucking true, seeing as there is about 3,500 different things that cause a hangover. Not all of them are really understood by the medical profession. Now, if you're thinking about going out and getting yourself a bottle, keep in mind that it is almost £1,500 for a bottle. I'm going to put my machine on to work to try and get a bottle. But I thought I'd read a bit of information from their press release that they released. In October 2015, the Vitamin Alcohol Company launches the world's first and only vitamin-infused organic vodka into the Central European premium spirits market. Described by connoisseurs as the ultimate and purest premium vodka in the world and created from organic Australian sugarcane in the pure mountain waters of the Hunter Valley near Sydney, which is also where some of the world's best wine is made, just quietly, Vitamin Vodka features a smooth, crisp palate with subtle citrus notes. This ultra-refined and diamond-filtered spirit is traditionally distilled 12 times in copper pots using natural organic ingredients. Produced in limited quantities and free from preservatives and impurities, Vitamin Vodka represents uncompromising purity and quality and is best enjoyed neat or mixed as a chilled cocktail. As to go with their tasting notes, this is what they have to say on the matter. Clear in colour, featuring a smooth, crisp palate with subtle citrus notes. Alcohol content of 40%, which for almost £1,500. Did I mention it was £1,500 a bottle? Not dollars, not American or US dollars. Pound. That's fucking pound sterling. It's about $1,700 American, and the rate the exchange rate is here in the Aussie dollar, it would probably cost about this. You could buy a car for the fucking price of a bottle. They recommend that it's best served chilled with allowing it to breathe for 5 minutes, pouring the chilled vodka into a frozen shot glass. Sip and savour. An indescribably pleasurable sensation will envelop you after the first taste. So that is vitamin vodka. Will it hold? Does it have the fucking minerals indeed to stop a hangover? Only time will fucking tell. And I tell you what, we will soon fucking try and find out. Now, moving right the fuck along to utter friggin' news. The World Beard and Mustache Championship. Actually, no, before we get to that, the Wild Turkey Distillery robbery, which we covered in the start of the year, has had new developments. According to latest court documents filed Thursday in the bourbon theft and steroid ring that was cracked wide open there a couple weeks ago, investigators have confirmed that 5 barrels recovered from alleged ringleader Gilbert Kurtzinger's property match barrels missing from the Wild Turkey Distillery. In a supplemental discovery response filed by the Franklin Assistant Commonwealth's Attorney Office, a report produced by Wild Turkey Distillery indicates the 5 barrels of bourbon sheriff detectives found in an outbuilding at Kurtzinger's home in March have physical traits, numbers, and manufacturing marks consistent with Wild Turkey barrels. Additionally, further analysis of the barrels by Wild Turkey Distillery personnel indicate that the bourbon inside the once black spray-painted barrels match bourbon produced in the distillery in 2009. Tongue and groove markings, rivet marks with a K and Y, employee ID numbers all along the barrels accompanied by an assembly date of February 17, 2009 found on the recovered barrels are consistent with the barrels reported missing from the Wild Turkey Distillery at the start of the year. According to the court documents, Wild Turkey Distillery used the barrel markings and compared them against its inventory management system. The barrels in the date range came from the letter A warehouse in Camp Nelson. Franklin County Sheriff's Office have been told that the 5 barrels were stolen from Camp Nelson in December of 2014. After inspecting the warehouse, Wild Turkey Distillery found 5 barrels missing from locations where the barrels would have been stored, matching the employee number, stave counts, and assembly date as the 17th of February 2009. Per the Alcohol and Tobacco Tax and Trade Bureau, every barrel must be marked with a distillery number, batch, and product identification. The recovered barrels were also stamped with that information. Bourbon samples from each of the 5 barrels underwent an aroma evaluation where the bourbon was cut to 40% alcohol by volume by a 4-person sensory panelist at Wild Turkey. Collectively, the panel has industry experience of more than 80 years. The panel agreed that the profile was consistent with the Wild Turkey mash bill and sample of a bourbon stored in the same rickhouse produced in 2009. Wild Turkey distillery chemist Jane Purcell proof tested the bourbon from the barrels and found the proof consistent with the inventory of 115 proof, or roughly 57.5% ABV. So it's good to see that they've finally got some of their barrels back. Now, these barrels are fucking huge. Like, I know a lot of people go, oh, it's only 5 barrels, it can't be too hard. These barrels hold a couple hundred litres of a fucking pure strong ass bourbon. Look at that, 115 bourbon. 57%, you cut that out, you've got 5 barrels, say even if they're only 200 litres, you're still looking at 1,000 litres, cut that down to about 1,200 litres. That's a shitload of bourbon, my friends. That's a shitload of bourbon when watered down to 40%. It is indeed good to see that the dirty thieves have at least been caught, especially in what was a rash, an absolute fucking rash of bourbon and scotch thefts that we were seeing at the end of last year, start of this year. It is absolutely fucking crazy. So, I just thought I'd update everybody on that little fucking development of the day. Pardon me. And that's about all the booze news I've got this week. I'm going to be reviewing some Mayfair gin very, very soon. But I've got some plates spinning that I want to see to the end before I start doing another booze review. So we're going to move on to some beard news this week. And unfortunately, I wanted to do a bit more coverage on what I'm going to be able to on the original, and I say original, because of all the hoopla that's been going on with the two World Beard and Mustache Associations at this moment. The traditional original World Beard and Mustache Championship was recently held in the town of Liaogang in the Austrian mountains, with over 300 beard and mustache men from 20 different countries attending and competing in one of 18 characters across three divisions, which were mustaches, partial beard, and full beards. Each category featuring three prizes for the best facial hair. Now, trying to find the actual names of the winners has proven to be rather fucking difficult, mainly because as we covered last year with the hoopla between the WBMA organization and one that was started in the States who got in and got the registered trademark on the name World and Beard Mustache Championship. It's been rather hard to track down some winners, although I have noticed some familiar faces that we have seen. Jeff Langnum, MJ Jackson, Mick Wallage, just to name a fucking few of the amazing beardsmen who attended this prestigious competition. So if you do happen to have seen the competition or you went to the competition, you lucky bastards. So the next one's being held in America before shipping over to, they just released who was getting the 2009. That was Antwerp, is going to get the 2019 World Beard and Mustache Championship, with the 2017 competition being held in Austin, Texas, which is fucking hilarious if you ask me, but what can you do? So that was, like I said, I wish I could cover more of it, but unfortunately they're not the best with handing out the information or publishing the information as it comes about. I've spent literally the entire day looking for the winners and everything else, so I just can't find it. Lots of pretty pictures, don't get me wrong, but no actual information on names. I do know that Jeff Langnum took out second prize in the full natural beard, and the guy who won it last year, in the American competition, a fellow by the name of Nick Mahosky, once again took out the gold for the second year running. And I mean, it is amazing. It is an absolutely amazing beard, so you can't fucking compete with that. I'm sorry. So I thought instead what we might do is we'd look at another one of these articles where they go through the beard facts. Now, this one is 20 beard facts, amazing facts about beards that you probably didn't know. And I quite like this one because there were some new ones in there that I haven't seen in any of the old standards. Now, I'm going to go through them one at a time and we'll just have a bit of a look, shall we? So the fear of beards is called a pogonophobia, which is pretty fucking obvious considering that pogonophile is someone who is attracted to beards. Now, symptoms of pogonophobia can include nausea, feelings of dread, sweating, and a regular heartbeat. Often felt by little kids in particular, especially if there's no bearded men in their life. Although you get these weird kids sometimes, I've noticed. Their fathers are clean shaven, their uncles are clean shaven, their grandparents are clean shaven, but they still love the beard. There's something about a bearded man that they must trust. This is one I didn't know. The CIA once tried to hurt Fidel Castro's image by making his beard fall off. Clearly they fail. Yes, indeed. The great CIA tried to contaminate the Cuban leader's clothes and shoes with thallium salts to make his beard fall off. In another instance, they even planned to spray hallucinogens on a broadcast studio right before Castro was to give a live televised speech. Man, they really fucking hated Cuba. Fact number three. Golden beards were all the rage in ancient Egypt, as previously covered by in an episode a couple back. Fact number four. Beards are said to increase social status. In the Dixon and Vasey 2012 study on beards, it was observed that women found men with beards to look older and appear to be of a higher social status. Now, without reading the article itself, or the report itself, sorry, the study, whatever the fuck, I can only assume it is because this was still in the mighty upswing of the beard, and really, in a clean-shaven world, to be able to say, I don't give a fuck, let's grow a beard, it's got to say something about your fucking character. And of course, I look older. Not that there's many photos of me out there. If you have managed to see me with a beard, I can guarantee you almost that you haven't seen me without some form of facial hair and after the age of about 15. That's because I look like my fucking sister, who's about 5 years younger than me. In fact, one of the reasons why I will never be able to get rid of my beard, even if I wanted to, which I never ever will, never will, brothers and sisters, is because my missus will fucking dump me because I look too young. Fact number 5. Beards grow faster in the daytime than the nighttime. They also, incoincidentally, happen to grow faster, thicker, quicker, lusher even. Once you have an idea that sexual activity is going to resume, there is that famous, or semi-famous in certain circles, study done by a research scientist who would often be on an island or in remote areas for long periods of time and would leave the razor at home, mainly because he's out there with the fucking animals and nothing fucking else. And what he noticed is in the 2 weeks leading up to his departure and arrival back to civilization, his beard growth would exponentially increase. Doing a study, he come to the realization or the conclusion, that once you have it in your head that you're going to rejoin civilization, your body realizes that the resumption of sexual activity is going to be highly increased in the odds, and thus starts producing more testosterone, one of the major hormones responsible for beard growth. Fact number 6. If you drink an average amount of beer, in a year your average length mustache will trap a pint and a half of beer. Now, as somebody who has very rarely, I've shaved, like I said, 2 or 3 times in the past, it'd be 18 years now, I have noticed that I'm a messy fucker. When I shave my beard, I am the messiest fuck under the sun. And that is because you learn to drink with a beard and a mustache, and it does trap an awful fucking lot. Moving right along to fact number 7. The International Boxing Association prohibits amateur boxers from having beards, meaning that you've got to be pro in order to grow. Fact number 7. During the Middle Ages, touching another man's beard was such an insult, it could result in a duel. A man's beard was seen as a sign of virility and honor. Why would anybody think of touching it? Now, if you go out these days, try and stop motherfuckers from touching your beard. Honestly, I would have to say that when I do happen to wander down to the local pub or the local club for a bit of a fucking stepping out and getting a bit wild, it is quite often a pretty damn near even split of men and women who are fascinated by the beard, want to touch it, stroke it, and all the rest of it. Causes my missus no end of laughter and no end of jealous moments, let me tell you. Fact number 8. Most men shave when a family member dies. In ancient Rome, it was the opposite. To show you were grieving, you would leave your beard unshaven. Obviously, since at a time like that, grooming yourself wasn't the first thing in mind, and thus you had to show that. Fact number 9 is an old standard that we see in every one of these lists. Beards can protect you from pollen or dust allergies. This is due to the fact that it acts as a filter between your mouth, your nose, and all the nasty shit in the fucking air. Now, fact number 10 was something I really found quite interesting. If the average man stops shaving forever, never shaved again in his lifetime, his beard would grow up to 27.5 feet. Roughly 4 meters long. Yeah, 4 meters long. Don't check the math. I really don't want you to check the math. Fact number 12. A man who regularly shaves his beard spends roughly 3,350 hours of his life in the bathroom. It'll even more time if you take your phone in there. Now, in saying this, this is one of the main proponents of these fucking these lists when they come up. This is an old standard that it saves you more time. Now, anybody who's got a beard of any decent length will tell you that that time is quickly replaced with grooming the beard, brushing it, trimming it if you are one of these people who like to groom their beards and keep it, you know, give yourself a cheek line, a neck line. And, of course, you've got the abundant amount of beard oils, balms, mustache waxes, and all the like in itself. So I tend to discount that from my own personal list. The next fact we have is Alexander the Great was against beards in his infantry. Good old Alex believed that beards were dangerous in hand-to-hand combat and made all of his men shave. Pretty similar to that scene in Fight Club where you soon learn to shave your head and trim your nails and all that sort of shit. Within time, beards would grow back, only this time soldiers kept them to display their lack of fear in times of war. So that is where the armed forces' fascination with beards tends to come from. It's a way of showing that you ain't scared of no cunt. Now, this one I found rather interesting. To add earnestness to any royal message, kings were often known to attach 3 beard hairs to a wax seal. How fucking cool is that? Just, you know, writing a missive to the King of Denmark. I think I'll fucking put a couple of beard hairs in there just so they know I'm being deadly fucking serious. Another old standard, another favourite comes in the argument of beard versus no beard has come along in this list. Beards can protect you from UV rays. It also hides signs of ageing. A study by the University of Southern Queensland, which is actually just down the road from where I live, found that facial hair can block up to 95% of the sun's harmful UV rays. Not to mention, it also helps prevent visible signs of ageing found around your face, head, and neck.
Duh.
This list would not be complete without the fact that there was a time in certain places where you had to pay a tax to keep a beard. This is specifically referring to 17th century Russia, where you could be taxed up to 100 rubles a year for having a beard. This tax entitled you to a medallion you could carry that said, "This beard is a useless burden." It was another sort of form of the status symbol of beards while making sure that the Russian tax coffers stayed full. These days, you can actually buy a replica pewter medallion at beardtoken.com. You can buy them in a flask, you can buy them on a key ring. You can just buy the medallion by itself. They actually look pretty cool. They're a pretty faithful fucking replication of the beard medallion that you had to keep on your person at all times in public to be able to show the local constabulary that you had paid your tax. Here's one that not a lot of people may know. That an 11-year-old girl was the person who convinced Abraham Lincoln to grow a beard. Now, this apparent quote, this apparently came from a letter written by 11-year-old Grace Bedell to Abraham Lincoln, wherein she said, "You look a great deal better with a beard, for your face is so thin." And Honest Abe's beard has since become a fixture amongst the bearded fucking population. There you go. Not because he's Amish, but because an 11-year-old girl told him to grow a beard. Now, this is one that's cool. The longest female beard ever recorded was measured at 30 centimetres. Now, polycystic ovaries are the reason why females will grow beards. What polycystic ovary syndrome, or the condition itself, what it does is it forces the female body to produce a massive amount of testosterone, hence causing beards to grow. We've covered this a little bit, but I never knew that the record was actually 30 centimetres. Once again, going back to, calling back to the story I told about the research scientist who found that his beard grew more when he was getting ready to go back to the mainland, so to speak. Beards will actually grow faster when a man has not had sex in a while. So the next time you go to a pub with girls around, make sure you're not seen stroking your long beard for too long. They might mistake you for some sex-starved creep. It does come off a little bit rapey if you don't have a wizard beard. So the longest beard ever recorded was belonging to Hans Langseth, which was about 5.33 meters long at the time of his death. As far as people who are still alive go, the longest beard currently belongs to Samsha Singh of Punjab, whose beard was 6 foot long the last time it was measured. Now, 6 feet is about 1.83 metres. The record for the longest beard ever, however, belongs to Hans Longseth, whose almost 5.5 metre long beard was last seen on this world in 1927. So, I like these little lists. Every now and then, like, I mean, you got your old standards, but every now and then, you see these little lists that come up, and they're always a bit of fun to look at. It's always nice to see these positive little arguments for the beard amongst the myriad amounts of it's time to shave, peak beard, it's this anti-bearded fucking media that we seem to be living in now. Honestly, fucking, if you're going to shave your beard, hurry up and be done with it, and let the bearded men come along and do what they do best. That's our show for this week, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I don't think I've got anything else. I have got a couple of things on the ball. I do know that I have been gone a couple of weeks. Last time when I was on, I did promise I was going to get Mitch from Ghost of Stark Gaming on to talk about the new Taken expansion. That is going to be, unfortunately, put along next week. We're just scheduling conflicts. Mitch has had some things happen that he needs to be sorting out. So, something that we haven't done in a while, last couple episodes, actually, that I've noticed and I feel absolutely fucking horrible about, is we haven't delved into the vault of Beard and Focus stories. Now, Beard and Focus stories, for those of you who are just coming along to the show, is something that we've got on the website where we want to get to know the man behind the beard. We want to hear your story, why you wanted to grow a beard, and just how much of a legend you are in general. Bearded men are one of the most dynamic and diverse group of fucking people that you will ever meet. Quite often with the best of intentions at heart. So this week, for our Beards and Focus story, we are going to read the story of Sean Hauer. So it all started in the year 2006. One day, I just woke up and said to myself, "Self, let's grow a beard." I hadn't any real reason to grow a beard. I'm just that type of guy who loves change. And when I say change, I mean often from one extreme to the other. I think it keeps life exciting, and it keeps my sex life healthy. Well, that wasn't creepy at all. So, in 2006, I stopped shaving and grew for my first time. It took a good 5 months to have a full, healthy beard. I loved it. Other than people gauging my age by my looks, because when I'm rocking a beard, it adds easy 8 to 10 years onto my apparent age. Other than that, I've got mad respect from the people on the streets. It felt good to have gangsters and Harley guys giving me a nod and a stiff stare as I walk by. So as time went on, my beard got thicker and harder to manage. I hated taking a shower, yet having the tight, stiff feeling on my beard curling up. Doit. So I researched what would be good to relax and make my beard hair more manageable. I found out coconut oil serves many amazing purposes. So I ran out and brought some, and I used it in the beard day and night. It helped a lot. So I further researched other good oils and things to put in a beard. After I took notes and did the research, I brought all kinds of shit and experimented with making a balm. After about 4 to 6 months, I mastered the texture, smell, and benefits of the supplies used to make my balm. In all those years of making my own beard balm, I had never thought about selling it until about last year. I'm calling it Crow Keeper Beard Balm. I use all organic and 100% natural products. I only make small batches at a time, and I feel good knowing beardsmen of all types will support my brand. Beard barbs in all kinds of different scents, as well as beards, oils, and wooded beard combs are my game. I've created a huge fan base because of my beard, which has helped sales. So between 2007 and 2014, I've grown a beard and shaved. So in 2014, I told myself I'd grow it for a year. A beard, if you will. Because all the years previous, I always shaved after about a 6 month growth. Just about 2 weeks ago, so about the start of the year, just to keep things in continuity, I shaved off my growth just 2 weeks shy of the year. It was depressing, but I've managed to get over it. I haven't seen my family in over a month and wanted to scare slash surprise my wife of 11 years, my 8-year-old daughter and 5-year-old son. Boy, were they surprised. Now, in case you're wondering why he hasn't seen them in so long, it is because Mr. Sean works in the entertainment industry. He is he works for a major studio. It's all very hush-hush, as you can understand. Now, in 2012, I saw a huge mass of men rocking beards in LA, and as years progressed, it seems as if the beard family grew. I enjoy growing and shaving. It throws everyone off yearly as well as myself. Bearding to me is like a sport. There's always a bigger, better looking beard. But at the end of the day, we have major respect for one another. Beard on, brothers. It takes love, dedication, and hard work to beard. So that was our Beards and Focus story for this week. Thank you for joining me once again. Sorry it's taking me so long to get another episode out. I do apologise deeply. Like I said, things are a little bit sort of fucking up in the air at the moment. I got shit going on, you got shit going on, and it is what it is. So if you want to track us down, you can find the Drunken Beersman shit, which is all over social medias, at the Drunken Beersman on the Facebook, at Drunk Beersman, absolutely everywhere else. You can track me down at the Drunkle Dan, absolutely everywhere, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, the PlayStation Network, if you feel so inclined, the Star Wars games, fuck it, anywhere you can socially connect with somebody, you can generally find me under The Drunkle Dan. Next week, we're going to look at beard barbs and oars and some of the ingredients used, and a bit of a guide on how to make it yourself. Something that has come up a couple of times in the Bearded Villains group that I am currently a part of. This week has been, this month is, of course, Suicide Prevention Month, and today is actually World Mental Health Day. So, if you know somebody out there who's going through a tough time, why don't you give them a ring and just ask them, are you okay? Until then, I'm Drunk with Dan, on the same drunk channel, at the same bearded time. Stay bearded and beautiful, people. This has been a production of RVSR Media. Once again, we'd like to thank you for joining us on this lovely Sunday afternoon, or whenever it is that you're watching it on the podcatcher of your choice. Remember, the Drunken Beersman only ever promote drinking in moderation. Don't be a fuckhead. Until then, we love you. You and my beard are gonna have a really nice time. My beard, it's waiting for you. And girl, you know I want you too. So put your hand up in my beard and see what you can find. You don't have to be scared. Just touch it, baby, yeah. Of my facial hair. Just put your hand right there. There's magic in the air. And darling, yeah, you really want to clutch it for reasons you can't understand. You want it so much. So baby, just reach out your hand. Let it all go. This is the moment dreams come true. So do I want to do.